Here's a scripture that I think is sobering, if not downright depressing. I'm going to read it to you from Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. Then I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun. And behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them. So I congratulated the dead, who are already dead, more than the living, who are still living. But better than both of them is the one who has never existed, who has never seen the evil activity that is done under the sun. I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and a striving after wind. So he talks about, in chapter 4, this oppression. But in chapter 3, I'm going to read this from the New English Translation, chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, verse 16. I saw something else on earth. In the place of justice, there was wickedness. In the place of fairness, there was wickedness. Jeremiah talks about God taking the punishment to Jerusalem, to Judah. He says this, for thus says the Eternal of Hosts, this is Jeremiah 6, verse 6, cut down the trees, cast up the siege against Jerusalem. This is the city to be punished, in whose midst there is only oppression. Ezekiel chapter 22 and verse 29 says, the people of the land have practiced extortion, committed robbery. They have oppressed the poor and the needy. They have extorted from the sojourner without justice. It all happened after the hospital had hired a new supervisor. He came in. And because he wanted to hire some of his own cronies and not some of the people who were already there, he worked his way to try to get rid of certain people. He couldn't get rid of my client very easily, so he trumped up charges against her and a couple of her friends because her friends would not turn her in. She was summarily then put on a list. She was sent home. You know, you go home. We'll consider it. You're on suspension right now. Without any further ado, without any more investigation, the next thing, she was terminated. She and her two friends, her other two friends, were terminated. One of her friends decided, well, if I'm terminated, I think I ought to go down and get unemployment compensation. So she went down, but the hospital corporation charged her and said, no, we terminated her for cause. She can't get unemployment. So she went down and she asked my client, can you go with me? Testify for me. She did. She went there and testified for her friend. Her friend then said, okay, the unemployment judge said, well, did you do these things that they're charging? And my client said, no, she did not do them. She also said, I did not do them. And another person from the hospital went there and said, no, that never happened. She never committed these acts. Oh, okay. So she got unemployment compensation. They then went to an attorney. I referred him to an attorney for a wrongful termination suit. The attorney then filed a brief against the hospital. Wrongful termination on behalf of these three people. My client then got another job during that time, found another hospital to work at, and she began to work there. All of a sudden, without warning, without statement, she was arrested. I think I've talked to you about that. I won't go into it deeply. But the DOJ, the Department of Justice, Homeland Security, what is a part of Homeland Security, came to her house, cops in riot gear, I mean, fighting gear, helmets on, all surrounding the house, banging the door, you know, coming in, searching every room with their guns out, and then taking my client out in the middle of the morning and taking her to jail, where she spent 30 hours before they processed her and processed her out. Her other two friends were also arrested. One rested at the hospital, at the place where he was now working, a new place. And of course, once you're arrested, what were they charged with? My client did not even receive a list of charges when she was first arrested, because part of Homeland Security, we don't have to tell you why you were arrested. We just took you to jail. She said, "Why am I being arrested?" "Shut up, get over here." And that was it. She went to jail, came out, charged. That was 10 months, over 10 months ago, 11 months ago. Last May, actually, was May in which she was arrested. She was charged with felony perjury. Felony perjury because you said that woman didn't commit these acts, and the hospital said she did. So you lied. You're on trial. Plus, we're charging you. Then the hospital charged them with abuse of a patient. You abused a patient. You tied her down unnecessarily. And they said, "No, we didn't. We didn't, and we never tied her down." "No, yes, you did. We charged." So now, elder abuse, restriction. You've denied somebody civil rights and all that. 10 months ago, they had no attorneys. They lost their jobs. They were out of money. The thing dragged on. They can't get any work since last year, almost a year ago now. And they're out of money. They had to go and get a public defender. Well, thankfully, as blessings would have it, they got pretty good lawyers, because the public defender's office was out of state-employed public defenders, and they got people who do pro bono work from other law firms, and pretty good attorneys they got. The attorneys looked at this case and said, "This is ridiculous. This is a sham. They're certainly not going to go." So they filed and said, "You know, won't you just kill the case?" The prosecutor for the DOJ said, "No, we're going to trial." Giving them an opportunity, trying to get one of them to turn against the other, "We'll give you just a slap on the wrist if you'll tell us that they did it." Because they virtually had no evidence except two other witnesses that said they did. So the thing that finally, the trial kept being postponed, come up to it, the DOJ would say, "We need more time," and they would try to depose. And finally, it went to trial 2 weeks ago, come Monday. And opening argument, selection of jury, the DOJ dismissed everyone who had a medical background. Anybody who had been in a hospital or anything was dismissed immediately as a part of the jury. My client kept saying to me, "If I don't, I'm facing jail. I'm facing 16 years, possible of 16 years in prison for this. If I get accused of a felony, I'll never work again, even if they give me probation, I can never work." And the DOJ said, "If you'll just admit to a serious misdemeanor, that you abused the patient, that you tied her down, you'll just have a smaller sentence of jail, and then you'll be released." My client said, "If I do that, I'll never get a job. I'll never be able to work again. I'm too old now to change professions, and I can't do that." Well, they went to court. They've been in court all week. And her attorneys questioning the witnesses. The witnesses double-talked, triple-talked, or didn't agree. Then they brought in the others, and my client said, "I have to testify. I have to testify so, to show that I'm not a monster." I said, "Well, what's the jury look like when you're there in the jury? What did the jury look like?" She said, "Well, sometimes the jurors look like they're bored. Some of them are like they're sleeping. Some of them are looking like, they're pretty interested in this case. They're like shocked and looking around. And then some of them looking at us like we are monsters." And I said, "Well, what happens if you don't get a unanimous jury?" She said, "Well, then we get a hung jury, and that's mistrial." I said, "What happens for a mistrial?" "The DOJ will try us again. We'll rearrest us, try us again, and of course, we're all out of money. All of us, we're not working. None of us have money. we will be out on the street. I can't survive anymore. So I said, so here are the things. The worst part will be a conviction. The next worst will be a hung jury, mistrial. You have to have a complete acquittal. Is that correct? She said, yes. Have to have a complete acquittal. She called me Thursday night. We go to, I have to be in court. They sent it to the jury Thursday late afternoon. I have to be in court on Friday morning. I said, wow. She said, we have to stay around all day. We're not allowed to leave the courtroom. Keep our cell phones on down in the cafeteria or whatever. We'll get a call. And when we get a call, we have to mean that means the jury's back. If you don't hear from me, if I don't call you, they will arrest me right on the spot if it's a guilty plea. Guilty. If you're pronounced guilty, they come over, put your hands behind your back, put the cuffs on, and lead you away immediately to jail. That's it. So if you don't hear from me, David, she said, you know I've been arrested. It was guilty. The difference between ancient times and today, there's just a little caveat here, is that in the United States of America, we have a constitution. The constitution says we have a right to a speedy trial, and we have a right to be tried before a jury of our peers. They have a right to listen to the case and then make a judgment. Yesterday afternoon, I got a call from my client. I said, what is it? Have they decided or are they postponing and have to come back again? She said, acquitted, not guilty on all counts. She was called. They went down. She said she stood up waiting for the jury to come in. The jury marched in, handed the thing to the bailiff. The bailiff handed it to the judge. Now, here's the other thing. The judge had been a part of the Department of Justice, DOJ. He had been a prosecutor. He tended to favor them. Every time she objected, he sustained her objections, the prosecuting attorney for the DOJ. The judge himself then changed and said they were all being tried as one unit. And he said, no, you can consider each one separately, whether this one is guilty of it, whether that one is guilty of it. They all did the same thing. They're all being charged with the same things, except my client had an extra felony charge for testifying for her friend. But now you separate it. And he said, it's not a matter whether they tied down the person or even put them in restraints in any way, which they didn't tie her down. They gave her a chemical restraint, which was a shot. But you may consider whether they upset this person, that whether this person was upset emotionally. And that becomes a violation of elder abuse and, again, a misdemeanor, which lands you in jail. The jury came back. My client was the first one named. On the account, in the matter of Judy, on the issue of felony perjury, we, the jury, find her not guilty. When she said that, my client broke down and began to cry. She cried so hard that three or four or five of the jurors started crying with her. And then the other charges, guilty of elder abuse, not guilty. Is she charged on with this? Not guilty. Not guilty, right down. Then the others, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. Afterward, my client walked outside, and a number of the jurors were there. And she said, I just want to thank you for giving back my life. And she was crying, and they were crying. And they said, we knew this was a bogus case right from the beginning. It was a fraud case. We could tell it. And now there's suspicion that this hospital corporation had connections to somebody in the DOJ and deliberately had this done in order to stave off what will now be a multi-million dollar lawsuit against that corporation for destroying their characters, ruining their professions, and wrongful termination. Thank you to some of the jurors. Thank you to people who have some good sense. That's the only thing that would stop the oppression that was described in the scriptures today. What did Ecclesiastes 3:16? I saw something on earth. In the place of justice, there was wickedness. In the place of fairness, there was wickedness. And on the part of those oppressed, they had nobody except in the United States of America, thanks to our Constitution, they had a jury.